Those of you paying close attention to your bulletins might have noticed a discrepancy in what is printed there and what I just read. I've talked before about how I follow the lectionary in my preaching, that sequence of readings that tries to ensure we cover the major themes of the Bible over a 3-year cycle. I use it because it presses me into texts that I might not otherwise select. I'm sure you would all have gotten very tired of hearing Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Luke by now. But it also helps me to see God in ways I might not otherwise have when I look at other texts I might not have chosen on my own. I do sometimes, however, quibble with the way that the lectionary writers have broken up the text. This was one of those weeks. A week in which I found the lectionary defined borders around the gospel lesson too restrictive. The lectionary offered up for today verses 21 through 28, with an option to extend earlier to verse 10. At first, as I was planning this service, thinking that probably all of you would want me to stop talking quickly so you could go eat, I planned to just do the shortest possible reading. And then as I read, I realized we needed to back up to verse 10, and then as I wrote, I realized we needed to go back to verse 1. I'm sorry, you're just going to have to wait a little later for lunch. This last section of the text, the one which the lectionary most strongly presented to us, carries in my Bible the subheading, "The Canaanite Woman's Faith." This story can, presented alone, cause some to struggle. We live today with the benefit of fully assembled Bibles all around us, with the benefit of nearly 2,000 years of scriptural interpretation and received wisdom seeping into our culture. And so we believe we know what to expect from Jesus. We expect Jesus to be a model of kindness and compassion. And so we begin this passage and read about this Canaanite woman approaching them, and we think, of course, Jesus will help this woman. And so it can be confusing or distressing to hear Jesus first ignore and then attempt to turn her away. This is why selecting the borders of the passages matter. Imagine for a moment if in our reading this morning we had gotten to the part where Jesus says, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel," and stopped. That would be a very different story. Of course, we did continue forward. We did read that Jesus engaged in further conversation with this woman and did ultimately heal her daughter. Now, if you believe, as I believe, that Jesus always intended to heal this woman's daughter, we need to ask, why then did Jesus argue with her about it? Why did Jesus first ignore her and then act as if he would send her away? Answering that question is what causes us to take our first step back earlier in the text to the preceding paragraph. In the text, immediately before this conversation between Jesus and the Canaanite woman, Jesus, the disciples, and the crowd are discussing dietary rules, are discussing things that are clean and unclean. And I want first to emphasize that they are not speaking of physical cleanliness, but spiritual cleanliness. It's especially important we make that distinction today as we have the opportunity to share a meal together in the fellowship hall after worship. Jesus did say, yes, to eat with unwashed hands does not defile, but please, wash your hands. especially if you are helping to serve others. Washing or not washing your hands may not impact your ultimate salvation, but Jesus makes no promise you won't get sick. Jesus is emphasizing in this passage that our words, the ways we speak to and about other people, matter more to God than the kinds of food we eat and whether we have used the correct fork for each course. But why are Jesus and the disciples and the crowd having this conversation at all? For that, we take our second step back to the top of chapter 15. Here, the Pharisees and the scribes confront Jesus. The scribes were something of the religious authority of the day. The Pharisees were more unofficial, but they were a popular group of, let's say, the ultra-devout. You've heard me before say that I think of the Pharisees as the sort of good, church-going, holier-than-thou Christians that we so often want to become when we encounter something we disapprove. The scribes and Pharisees had observed Jesus and his disciples. They had have seen them eat without washing their hands. And from a health perspective, I have to say I do agree with the Pharisees. Jesus and the disciples eating with unwashed hands is, to me, a little gross, especially as those meals would have come most likely from a single communal pot rather than individual plates or bowls. But the Pharisees and the scribes are not making a point about hygiene or public health. They are arguing only that people should wash their hands because their ancestors washed their hands, because it is an inherited tradition. They are attempting to argue that not washing one's hands is turning one's back on your ancestors, on your parents, on the tradition, and ultimately, not washing your hands is turning one's back on God. Jesus does not respond directly to their question. He instead points out that their traditions are not the same as God's commands. When we put these passages back in order, we begin with this confrontation between the scribes and Pharisees who have come all the way from Jerusalem and Jesus. They ask why Jesus and his followers do not eat as they eat, worship as they worship, why they do not follow the rules of tradition as the Pharisees and scribes understand them. Jesus tells them tradition is not the same as Scripture. Indeed, tradition can be used to undermine Scripture. In the case of the scribes and Pharisees, they use tradition to convince people that they can ignore God's commandment to honor their parents if they give enough money to the church. Then, Jesus gathers his followers, and with them he responds to the questions asked by the scribes and Pharisees, saying that it is what is in a person's heart, it is what is demonstrated in a person's words and actions that determine whether a person is clean or unclean, is good or is bad. This now catches us up to the passage with which we began. Jesus has just explained to the disciples that whatever the Pharisees and scribes might say, whatever the good church-going folk might think, the disciples are not excluded from God's love because of their failure to uphold all of the tradition. The text immediately moves then to an encounter with a Canaanite woman, a woman who is not Jewish, who, far from not upholding all of the rules of the community, is not a member of the community at all. The Pharisees had set out to make Jesus and his followers feel like they are outside the community, outside the bounds of God's love, using hand washing and dietary practices as a cudgel to beat them with. Jesus turns that point back takes away that weapon from them. But here, now, we have the disciples trying to pick up that same weapon against this Canaanite woman, asking Jesus to send her away because she is not even part of the community to begin with. If the disciples can be made to feel bad because they are breaking some of the rules, surely they can turn that against this woman who follows none of them. Jesus seems to believe that they are in need of an object lesson. And so, Jesus engages the woman in conversation. He does not immediately agree to heal her daughter, but neither does he do as the disciples ask and immediately send her away. Jesus engages with the woman so that the disciples can hear what she says. The disciples, they need to see, they need to be shown that just as their salvation comes through their faith and through their good intentions rather than their adherence to tradition, so too this woman's daughter is saved by faith and not tradition. There are many good things in all of our traditions. We each have our own as this community and as individuals. The problem is when we still, like the Pharisees and like the disciples, we still so often decide to make our traditions into sets of rules. We set out to take the rituals and practices that work for us, in which we find comfort, and we try to use them to bind others. We like to say that our homes, our communities, and our churches are open to all, but then we follow that word all with so many layers of fine print that we can find a reason to turn anyone away. Thankfully, though, we do gather here each Sunday for worship. We gather here each Tuesday for Bible study. We gather here Wednesdays starting next month for choir. We come together, we share meals, we share time of study and prayer. And each time we gather, we have the opportunity to remind ourselves again that Jesus calls us to something so much larger than we have ever imagined. Thanks be to God.